Siren Radio.
Yes, at least briefly, natural order is restored to the Premier League, which is good stuff. Okay, Gabriella, would you like to launch with the weather forecast? And then we can find out what Phil Leonis will have for the weather forecast. If, indeed, Phil, have you had the time to sort out the weather over in Los Angeles with all the rest of the mighty things you've been getting involved with?
Do you know, I have very little time to do anything else other than to worry about and plan about weather. Weather is foremost on my mind. I've got the 10-day forecast open all the time because, of course, there's a wedding coming up and we need to plan accordingly.
Oh, yes, that's exactly. It is the event. Let's not mess about here. I mean, Meghan and Kate Middleton and Sir Markles might have actually thought that this is the wedding of the century. You know, this is Lily Honeyman and Phil Leonis, and this is just awesome. I'm just glad our white box got over there safely.
Is Richard doing the commentary on it?
Please.
I'm sure we can get Richard Fitzwilliams to do the commentary.
You know, actually, that might be worthwhile considering. Well, I'll forward with our CNN contacts.
I think we can make Phil a royal, you know, citizen.
He is. It's Prince Philip Leonis.
Isn't there some kind of, you know, it's not a Knight of the British Order, obviously, but isn't there some sort of... status, royal status, honor that the Queen bequeaths upon people from other parts of the
world. Sir Bob Geldof. I mean, technically he's Irish, he didn't qualify, you know, but he's got knighthood, you know, so definitely.
So it's the Commonwealth, isn't it? I think it's the Commonwealth.
Yeah, but that presupposes that Philip wasn't part of the colonies, and he's one of the former colonies who rebelled against
us. I'm sure we can make him an honorary member or something.
Yeah. Well, I suppose Churchill actually had American background. Enough of this. Let's go to Gabriella first and foremost.
Richard would know, anyway.
The weather forecast, Gabriella, please, for the citizens of Lincoln in your own inimitable style from Gibraltar.
Okay, so the weather today for Lincoln is highs of 7 degrees centigrade, lows of 4 degrees centigrade, and it will be a day of strong winds and rain.
Which is probably one of the reasons why we haven't seen Emma Street or indeed Kira Osbrook or Becky Morgan Phillips, because it's strong winds and rain. Maybe Abigail, sort of, who knows? Ava, she'll be up the hill. Philip Leonis, how does that compare with your reading of the weather forecast for Lincoln, England, from Los Angeles, United States of America?
This just in, Americans can be knighted. They cannot use the title sir or dame, however. So, and I'm glad I didn't save that question to ask Richard, because gosh knows we have enough to talk about. But your weather, it looks like you're expecting some rain today. And how is this for synchronicity, Alex? The weather there is 4 degrees centigrade right now. The weather here in Los Angeles is 4 degrees centigrade.
I feel like we've been connected.
Midnight in Los Angeles? Well, just past.
In meteorological form.
Technically 5 minutes past
perfectly.
Midnight. Yeah. It's there. We are one world. We are one planet. We're a collection of co-creators. That's why Mike Dooley's on such good form last night. Must catch up with him in April, actually.
Put them together, and that 8 degrees makes for a lovely, lovely day.
But exactly.
It's 13 degrees in Gibraltar right now. From a high of 19 today. Yeah.
Nobody likes your constant bragging, Gabriella.
Yeah.
It's a way forward. Now, Gabriella, shall we use the phrase, as indeed created great brouhaha recently, where we say, oh, those colonies in Gibraltar.
But we're not a colony.
Exactly. Yeah. Did it create the kind of friction and furore that we were led to believe by the mass media when people dared to refer to Gibraltar as a colony?
I think it was heard in Gibraltar, and a lot of people were down the streets were complaining about it because we're obviously not a colony. Mm. We have our own government. We self-govern. We're part of the UK. We're an overseas territory. So, I think sometimes, it happens. A lot of people even down the streets will sometimes refer to us as a colony when they're foreign. So they come over to Gibraltar and they say colony and it's not, and then you have to explain to them the difference between a colony and an overseas territory.
So the American who doesn't, so therefore I've never been taught any geography, let me ask you, how will Brexit affect, if it takes place, how would that affect Gibraltar? Would Gibraltar have a hard border with the EU, or what would happen?
We already do. We already have a border with Spain, where you have, it's not like, we were never part of the Schengen area, so we never had like a free border where you just pass. We've always had checks, so passport checks, you know, car checks, you know, so it's not been uncommon for us to sometimes even wait for hours to cross the border. So,
even Gabrielle, you know, what Spanish folk are like, manana, you know, you
yeah,
want to
sometimes
get the,
when there's political issues and pressures put, pressures often put on the border because it's the way that we get everything from our food to, well, anything really. Everything's imported into Gibraltar. We don't grow anything. So, we rely heavily on food trucks and other trucks. Everything is brought in. So when there has been political pressure, the pressure is often put on the border. So it means that our, you know, all commercial vehicles are delayed. It means that, you know, pedestrians and traffic is delayed as well at the border. So to the point where a few summers ago, I think, the border queues reached up to 6 hours. So that ends up spanning the length of Gibraltar because it was so small. So we had to just make makeshift waiting areas in car parks and have people wait in car parks until they could
It's the British way.
Continue.
You know, when in doubt, when
but
there's a crisis.
We just hope that that doesn't happen again with Brexit because now, you know, we kind of have the border's been fluid for a while. There's always waits 45 minutes, an hour.
Not
cross,
4 days.
Not 6 hours. So that's always the big worry. That
Ben, you wish to say something.
Yeah, we love to.
Which is why 96% of us voted Remain, because we know we knew what Brexit meant. We knew exactly what it meant for our border.
That's because you did your research, you see.
And we didn't want, and no one wants to wait for 6 hours to cross.
96% voted Remain. What the hey? You know, we'll just
start sending the monkeys through with backpacks on.
Well, yeah. On our secret journey. Was that
and we also lived through a closed border a lot. That's what our history was during the years of General Franco. He closed the border. So
well, he would. He was fascist.
My parents lived through closed borders. My grandparents, you know, but when they were alive, they lived through a closed border era. So the border was closed for almost 20 years. So
at least we can look forward to a similar...
At that time, everything was flown in or ferried in, so very difficult for a country to have every single resource flown or shipped in from Morocco, and nothing coming from the land side.
And so just think, we can look forward to a similar thing happening when Scotland actually decides to actually go its way as well. It's genius.
Well, I hope it doesn't. I wouldn't wish it upon anyone.
So does that set the scene for an ideal place to have a post-honeymoon event, basically, for yourself, Phil, you know, after Brexit and so on and so forth, Gibraltar, where you might be locked in and never leave?
Kind of. It that was fascinating, and it only increased my interest in Gibraltar. So thank
John Lennon had his honeymoon here.
Exactly. And as we've said before, it's good enough for John Lennon and Yoko Ono. Yeah. It surely has to be good enough for...
Of course.
Time to follow in the footsteps of some great men.
But the problem is that I start to think about great men like John Lennon, and I think to myself, when John Lennon was my age, he'd already been dead for 10 years.
Yeah, I know,
so
you'd say that.
It falls apart at that point, yeah.
Listen, yesterday we already spoke to William Coles about his possible midlife crisis. He's going on an extensive ski training session, which is very deadly on that sort of basis. It's been awesome. I mean, I feel it's just been worthwhile. I mean, Rory, anything you want to add? Bedford your borders, perhaps?
No, Alex.
I
just want to say, Phil, congratulations on the wedding. I hope it all goes well.
I thank you.
Exactly. And you get those warm sort of feelings. I mean, it's fair to say that even the Robin Pierce, who stepped gainfully in from his Welsh castle to the Phil Dinner slot on a Wednesday evening, he takes notes on the show. He feeds in quite neatly.
He does.
He's not quite in Phil Dinner's league, is he, really? You know, we miss him on a Wednesday.
Exactly.
You
know.
Wait a second, though. Is that Welsh castle open for a potential honeymoon destination?
Sure.
Oh, Phil is thinking now.
Exactly.
Maybe.
We'd have to have a word with our starburst writer from that point of view.
Mm. How'd you get from LA to Wales?
Fly.
Presumably. Yeah, but to where? So
astral
traveling, and then having to do another 6 hours from London.
I'm sure you get through the borders to Wales somewhere along the line.
Do you know, I'm sure it's easier now. Who knows? But the one time that I did go to Wales, when I went to Port Merion, because I was a big fan of The Prisoner, this was many, many years ago, and I remember it was a trip from London, and oh my goodness, it was an arduous journey. Hmm. I could not believe that getting anywhere on an island so small could take so long. Of course, I had never driven with Alex Lefchuk at that point.
You will not let that lie, will you, Phil? You know, these are the sort of things where we think, what? You know, we got you there safely. That's the important thing.
It's not about even whether you get there or whether you get there safely. It's about who you're with when you wonder if you're going to get there safely.
Yeah. The journey
makes it memorable. Yeah, exactly.
It's what's called a grand tour, I believe, isn't it?
Would you like to ask those last two questions to Gabriella, please, Phil? Because after all, we do have Richard Fitzwilliams ready to talk about The Green Book, Beautiful Boy, and the BAFTAs.
What? That was a lot of alliteration in that introduction to Richard Fitzwilliams, so I commend you for that. Gabriella, thank you for answering my question. It was fascinating. Can I look forward to hearing your dulcet tones again very soon?
Yes, thanks. Yeah, I'll be back next week, and best of luck in your wedding, and congratulations.
Well, he'll still be single next week, Gabriella, so last chance saloon, obviously, if you want to make that immediate...
Have you heard the stag do
yet? I mean, I realise it could be like the graduate. Oh, yeah, has the Dean Hagland arranged event taken place, Phil? I mean, I've lost touch as well these days.
Well, I haven't asked yet. Gabriella, did you enjoy your telephonic link with us?
Yeah, very much did, thank you.
Okay, or indeed, whether Frodo is conscious or unconscious.
He's gone.
That's not obviously... That's all right. Frodo.
Even unconscious, he knew Brexit was a bad idea. But the deal with I heard you referred to as my stag party, we had a spectacular night planned, the centerpiece of which was a tour of a venue called the Lost Spirits Distillery in Los Angeles. And this is a whiskey, rye, rum distillery. And you take a tour of it for several hours. And in each room, you're given a flight of whiskey, rye, and rum. I mean, you get hammered at this place. But the venue itself is so amazing because each room is themed as a different famous motion picture. The production design spares no expense. And a la the Willy Wonka chocolate factory, the only way to travel through the factory from room to room is on a boat on a river that travels through the distillery. So this was going to be the centerpiece of the evening, and it caught fire.
No!
A fortnight ago. Yes.
What an omen!
We've been scrambling not to come up with plans, but to come up with plans that don't feel like a major letdown. Rather, a plan B that will provide its own charms in its own way. So I will report back to you what those plans are a week hence.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I do recall it's a well-known Russian tradition to actually sort of ignite the vodka and that sort of fires, but not a whole river of it.
Well, can you imagine a fire in a distillery? Yeah, there's no shortage of things to augment that fire at all.
Well, at least they were in good spirit. I'm sorry.
Hey!
Yeah,
you see, we're bright and early, even if it is to 60 minutes past midnight in Los Angeles, 60 minutes past 8 in London, we'll be, and Lincoln, England, where am I talking about? Yeah. And we'll be speaking to... Richard Fitzwilliams in a matter of seconds. Gabriella, take care. We salute you. Speak next week.
Okay, bye. So I'm out of here.
seem to boil any. That's right. Can't get the washer working. No, no. Now the toast is burning. I'm like a bullfrog in a frying pan. Oh, baby. What? When you're at home, where you belong. Just what I am. All right. I'm a lazy git. Yes, I must admit. I do most things, but I won't do that. Come on, oh, baby. When I'm home, where you belong.
Apparently he's just a lone little tiger now, because there's a hole in his heart where she used to be. Rod Stewart from his latest album, as we welcome Richard Fitzwilliams from his latest album in London, England. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
And yes, we have Rory McGowan in the studio.
Hello. Hello.
And Ben Lewis in the studio.
Morning, Richard.
And
hello, Ben.
Keeping the white all-male theme of the review going just that stage further... filled in as giving that piece having the token American that we've actually had to ensure that diversity gender is ticked, which is very good.
I have never seen Phil as a hello, Phil. I think you should protest against the use of the word token.
It's a former colony, and there are now only less than 239 hours and a half before Phil Leonis finally becomes a married man. All being well, unless, of course, somebody ignites...
I was going to say, the wedding goes up in flames. Oh, and
very best wishes. Mm.
Anyway, let us progress. Phil, would you like to anchor this particular moment and either invite Richard to talk about Beautiful Boy, the Green Book, the BAFTAs, whatever else you'd like to share?
Well, I would love to start with the Green Book because, as everyone knows, I think, next week, probably, Richard and I would reveal our Oscar nomination or our Oscar predictions. I've diligently been working on them tonight, but one of the Best Picture nominees is Green Book. And I must say that when that came out, or even before it came out, in a preview screening, when my fiance, my bride-to-be, Lily Holloman, and I saw that, as soon as she saw it, she said, "There's your Best Picture winner this year." So I'm eager to hear your thoughts, Richard, about the Green Book.
Well, I have to say that I thought it was an exceptionally fine film. And when I saw it, I was also wondering, is this going to be a very close contender for Best Picture, or has Roma got it? I mean, admittedly, I saw it some time ago, and Roma does seem to have moved into prime position. There's no question about that. Also, without dwelling on the various controversies linked to Green Book, and there's been a lot of publicity, as you know, there are a lot of dirty tricks when it comes to the Oscars, and this is no exception. But I thought it was an absolutely superb movie. We've got Dr. Don Shirley, played by Mahershala Ali, and a wonderful performance. I think he liked his diction. Really is gloriously fastidious, a black musical genius who tries to try and influence attitudes at great personal cost. As a classical pianist of renown, based in New York, when he decides to tour the segregated Deep South, he wisely hires a bouncer, Frank Tony Lip Vallelonga, played extremely well by Viggo Mortensen, as his driver and bodyguard. The film's title refers to the guide which listed safe places for persons of color to stay when visiting the South. And I thought that this was an exceptionally entertaining film, and some marvelous scenes. I mean, just as a comedy of manners, when Tony meets the fastidious Don for the first time, he's actually sitting on a throne in his colorfully decorated apartment in New York, which I absolutely love. And their arguments over manners and food when on the road, it's a road movie of a different sort, because Tony goes on a journey himself, because he sees how bigoted the attitudes towards Don actually are, despite his genius as a performer. I mean, countless films have looked at this topic and also have been set in the South and have examined the way that racial prejudice corrodes the lives of those who suffer from it. And the interesting aspect of Mahershala Ali's performance, as I say, there is his diction, there's his manner, the fact that the emphasis is on showing dignity in the face of what he knows very well is going to be appalling prejudice. An interesting character study, too, since he's partial to alcohol and also gay, so that means the dangers on an already perilous journey are much increased. Very, very interesting also the relationship between the two and how this develops. Superb performances, and I liked Linda Cardellini as charming as Tony's supportive wife, Dolores. She's receiving very lyrical letters from her husband, who's on the road on this rather extraordinary trip, and they're written, or at least they're certainly prompted, by Don. The dialogue is a very, very good one, I thought, and also, I mean, the message is obvious, and you see the most outwardly civilized of Southerners as well as the rednecks, and you've got two first-class performances. It's visually impressive, and though occasionally predictable, the end is predictable. Peter Farrelly directs with flair, and it's such a touching human story, so it was a five-star movie for me. I totally agree. I really liked it.
I find it refreshing because, you know, to me, bad manners are as much the target of the film as racism, because so often it's not a case of what people would consider outwardly racist behavior, but often just bad manners. And at its heart, the film is not a message movie. The film is a character study about how a friendship is born. And in that sense, it's very refreshing, because instead of it being about racism driving people apart, it's actually a character study of how the racism they encounter forges a friendship. And I wanted to just share with you, Richard, I once had the great good fortune to work for Dr. Shirley at UCLA. And about Mahershala Ali's performance, it was a wonderful performance. I was aware of what a wonderful performance it was, but it was at a turning point in the movie where I found myself crying, and I was so moved that someone as physically robust as Mahershala Ali, because he's a very strong man, a very physical presence, someone as physically strong as Mahershala Ali could capture physically the vulnerability and fragility, the frailty that that Dr. Shirley, when I knew him, certainly possessed. And for him to have embodied that moved me, it moved me to tears.
I agree. I mean, the scene where he expresses his isolation, too wealthy for his own people, and of course the whites reject him.
Yeah. It's a staggering moment, and so funny. The movie is so funny. I feel like it's the kind of movie that that Hollywood, the studio system, used to make. It's stylish. It offers multifaceted acting. It is about issues, but
the issues nevertheless are counterbalanced by, for lack of a better term, this high-stepping spirit of putting on a show.
Much like the Midweek Drive. It's interesting that both Annette André and Arthur Weingarten gave full thumbs up to the Green Book 3 weeks ago when we spoke to them about it, which is marvellous stuff there. Richard, just hold it momentarily whilst we find it in the studio. Ben Lewis, the Green Book, will you be checking it out?
Yeah. No, I'm quite interested to check it out, especially judging by the two reviews we've had on today.
Outrageously wonderful, really. I mean, it's like five-star ratings, and when you've got the Weingartens as well, it's amazing. And what about yourself, Rory?
I think I will be checking it out. Several BAFTA nominations. Mm. You can't mean it's a bad film.
Okay. Is it A Beautiful Boy, though?
A Beautiful Boy, I thought, was an extremely fine film. Directed by Felix van Grenegen, his debut in English, and also a very, very touching and powerful movie about drug addiction and the strain this puts on a father-son relationship. And David Sheff, a writer for the New York Times, discovers that his son Nick is in deep trouble. They both wrote memoirs about this, so the movie is based on this. And Timothy Chalamet as Nick, who it's a film, dwells from time to time on the problems, the horror of what actually happens when you're going through this dreadful process where you get hooked and then you get better and then you slip again, and how easy this is. And in rehab, you recover, then you go to school to try and become a writer, you start a relationship, you relapse. And, I mean, for example, the numbers of drugs involved, marijuana, cocaine, ecstasy, crystal meth. It's the study of deeply, deeply moving, I thought, because you've got Steve Carell, who I don't think's ever given a bad performance that I've seen, and I greatly admired him in, for example, Foxcatcher. So superb as the father who cares, who deeply cares, and who finds the pressures of attempting to deal with the dreadful situation of his son, how Nick is addicted, and how you're constantly seeing the way, for example, Nick goes to California. He feels his dad is trying to control him, so he leaves home and goes to stay with his mother, Karen, a good performance by Maura Tierney. A fresh start is one thing. It's so easy to relapse if you happen to be at a party or whatever. It's a powerful and tough film, and it shows the horrors of drug addiction and the emotional toll that this exacts on relationships, on the family, and what it puts the father through. Really, really wonderful performance by Timothée Chalamet, and I'm so glad that he's been nominated for awards. I loved Call Me By Your Name. I would love him to win for, and I'm sure that it will only be a matter of time before he does. Well, the film rings true. It's often very tough viewing. I thought it was a sincere, intense experience. It's a movie that also is very challenging for the audience, and it hasn't done too badly at the box office, but this is clearly a problem of the sort, because it hooks you, so to speak, and I totally recommend it for anyone who wants to see very fine acting and the social problems that this deals with, the difficulties of an addict, and every time he relapses, you know, your heart goes into your mouth. I loved this film.
Rory, you were nodding quite vigorously of one of the comments Richard was making there. Does that mean you're going to be checking this movie out as well?
I think I will. If he's recommending it on the back of Call Me By Your Name, I love that film, and hopefully I will love this one as well.
Ben?
Like Rory, yes, I'll certainly give it a go, and I'm quite happy to watch it. So based on the reviews, that sounds very positive.
Success. Great. I mean, I'll share it with my postgraduate students for Journalism and Contemporary Cinema, and who knows what marvellous things will be there. But Phil Linus, of course, decides to poo-poo the whole thing and say, no, it's far too depressing. I'd much rather actually have Lego Movie 2 as a classic.
Oh, yeah, you've really painted me correctly in that.
No, Alex, have you watched Sausage Party yet?
I still haven't finished it.
No. I want to point out something about this film. I'm an enormous Timothée Chalamet fan. I loved Call Me By Your Name. This is a film nominated for BAFTAs, received no award nominations in America at all, and not even really good reviews. Slightly positive reviews. Everybody compliments the performances. It's something cultural here, which is we can, I think, agree that the film has a very definite and planned, well thought out, muted emotional tone to it. And when the emotions are muted, which is, I think, so appropriate, I don't mean the emotions of the character. I mean basically the storytellers letting an audience off the hook by telling them how they should feel about something. And when films are muted in that way, they don't sit well with American audiences, whereas they get much better acclaim, it seems, with European audiences. I have historically tended towards the more European way of viewing these things. I don't like my movies to be so cleanly morally demarcated where I am told why I should have compassion for people. And it's exactly that. It's the kind of movie where if you are innately empathic and compassionate, I think you love the movie. And if you're
suggesting Donald Trump might not enjoy this?
Yes, that if you're American, maybe you're struggling with the concepts of compassion at this point.
Yeah. Maybe it's because of Phil's Norwegian background that he's able to actually echo that kind of Scandinavian empathy structure.
No, I didn't know.
Very few people do, but every so often I like to reveal it, like a little peek in terms of our man who likes being driven around Lincoln slowly.
Yes, well, I mean, I'm not allowed to speak of it, of course. It was.
I'd love to hear the family tree. If you could drop me an email, I'd be fascinated.
Richard, we'll get you that knighthood, Phil, even though you'll never be able to make it public.
I don't know if I've ever shared the story on the show, so maybe I'll share it with you one of these weeks, Richard. But it is a very amusing story about how my family name was made up in America. It's a completely made up name because when I was going to be traveling to Norway, I thought, there's almost no one with my last name here in America. I wonder if there will be many Norwegians. Maybe it's like Smith in Norway, and there's not one, which finally led me to my father, and he, after more than 80 years of life, says to me, "Oh no, our family name was made up. Didn't I ever tell you that?"
Oh, good heavens.
Nothing is real, as John Lennon once said. Anyway, moving on from that point of view, briefly for the BAFTAs, Richard, do you want to actually share anything else?
Because I mean, it is obviously going to be absolutely fascinating. I mean, my feeling is that looking at the record of the BAFTAs, I mean, there's no question that there is a preference for the home product. Of course, they moved before the Oscars so nearly 20 years ago, and the facts are that there is some influence there. You could add, no doubt, that the British wish there was more influence, but the facts are that for best film, I think they will choose, I know it got 12 nominations, but numbers mean very little. The point is, however, that The Favourite is undoubtedly very, very popular. My predictions, best film, The Favourite, The Roma could win it. I think it will be The Favourite. And I think if it doesn't, it will definitely be outstanding British film. No question whatsoever, in my view, Roma's going to win for Alfonso Cuarón, who's won 3 BAFTAs already, and there's no doubt for Gravity most recently. And, of course, there's no question that he is popular with the BAFTA audience. I mean, no question also, I think, that best actor, Rami Malek, but for best actress, Glenn Close, frankly, The Wife is not a good film. I honestly didn't think so. I know she's good in it, but it's not a question of awarding a career. It should be a question, I think, of awarding the particular performance. It's going to be Olivia Colman. I'm absolutely convinced Lady Gaga, no doubt, will run her quite close. And it's nice to see Viola Davis nominated for Widows, a film that I think Steve McQueen would have been disappointed by, the lack of nominations in the various awards categories. For leading actor, I mean, as I say, Rami Malek's The Cert, and for supporting actress, interesting, I think it'll be Amy Adams for Vice. She's superb as a particularly vulpine Lynn Cheney, the wife of the former vice president. Supporting actor will be Mahershala Ali. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And director for Alfonso Cuarón, I mean, is more or less written in
personally,
stone.
I can't get over the fact that they haven't even nominated Black Panther for Best Picture. It's outrageous.
No, you've got five.
Yes, exactly. Well, they should have quite clearly taken out the favourite and put in Black Panther.
You'd take out the favourite, would you?
Oh, yeah.
Why? I think, Alex, we ought to hear from you just fleetingly. Why the favourite? The movie that's probably going to win it all.
Yeah, well, exactly. Because irony, you see, take out the favourite, it is no longer the favourite. It ceases to be. That's the whole thing.
That is just a pun on words.
Do you know what's so confusing about handicapping these awards races is that people often use the phrase "the favorite" to describe different movies.
Mm. You know,
Roma is the favorite, so they mean front runner, but they use the phrase "the favorite." Mm. So I come away from hearing this going, "Well, everyone's predicting the movie the favorite."
Exactly, no, my reason why it should go.
Yeah, it's confusing. It's confusing. But I will say this, that just as a spoiler, for my predictions for the Oscars, Richard, I predicted Olivia Colman for Best Actress, even though I maybe think she's not going to win, but because she is so deserving that if she does win and I didn't predict it, I would be so angry with myself. Mm.
Well, Phil, I must say, I totally agree with you. I think the Glenn Close, I mean, the way the Oscars used to vote, the bringing us back to Elizabeth Taylor winning for Butterfield 8 and Shirley MacLaine.
It's a brilliant movie.
Track. I lost to a tracheotomy, a dreadful movie, and the fact she won because she was had been so ill and nearly died. So you therefore have, as it were, a reward for 45 years.
The healing power of the Academy Award.
Healing, it's not healing at all. This isn't what it's about. I totally agree, Phil. I absolutely 100% agree with you. I would say Lady Gaga, I think, is absolutely brilliant in A Star Is Born. I'm aware, however, that, of course, it's possible the chances of it winning now seem nil, so one has to accept that. But I'd be interested to hear, do you think the favourite, I mean, the BAFTAs have, you know, Atonement won, The Queen won, Howard's End won, Four Weddings and A Funeral, Sense and Sensibility of Full Monty. You can go through the list of the way they sometimes preferred the British product. Do you think the favourite is going to beat Roma for best film?
Of course it is.
At the BAFTAs?
Mm. Yes.
Oh, I really, I have no idea. I have no idea. I thought you were going to ask me about actress. I mean, all I can say is that I would certainly hope if the BAFTAs don't give Olivia Colman Best Actress, then who will?
Mm. Oh, they will. They definitely will. I'm absolutely.
They have to.
They must.
And I also don't know if the BAFTAs endeavor to do what the Oscars do, which is to share the wealth, as it were.
They've got a category, Outstanding British Film, so you can slip a movie into there that doesn't win Best Film, but in this case, I think the favourite is going to actually win. That's my feeling.
That's quite cool, the favourite.
The favourite always wins.
Precisely. That's why it should be taken out. Quite
probably an outstanding debut by a British writer, director or producer. I don't know if you've seen Beast.
No.
Beast.
No. Beast, no. But it does allow us for one set of questions from each. Rory. Rory, would you like to ask either Richard or Phil those last two questions?
Okay.
Your choice. Who are you going to ask? You've got to go first. Who are you going to ask, Richard or Phil?
I think I'm going to ask Richard.
Right, okay, go for it.
So, Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
It has been a pleasure, and it is a special pleasure to link up,
Richard,
with
you're not going to get an award, please. You don't start thanking people now. We'll save that for the next episode. Over gushing.
And will you be joining us again soon?
If you want a brief answer, yes.
Excellent, which means
Wonderful. It
leaves you, Ben, to throw the last two questions at our husband-to-be.
Husband-to-be,
week and a half.
Phil.
I'm not saying that we're going to be marrying him.
I was going to say, our husband-to-be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's kind of like
marrying Siren Radio.
I think so. Well, in the guise of Lily Holloman, clearly.
Very soon to no longer be a bachelor. Phil, have you enjoyed your telephone link for today on the show?
Not only have I enjoyed it, it's been educational and inspirational, especially when Richard was running through the laundry list of addictions that beset Timothy Chalamet's character in Beautiful Boy, it gave me many good ideas for my stag party.
That's the breaking news of the day.
Exactly.
And Phil, will you be joining us again sometime in the near future, hopefully next week?
Come on, my last appearance as a bachelor? Mm. How could I possibly...
Exactly. That's the spirit.
Absolutely. Yep. Every good wish, Phil, to us all.
Well, yep, but one more week. It'll be splendid. Time for Coldplay. We will. Coldplay and Charlie Brown. How are you, Ian Lennox?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Marvellous. I thought that wonderful pause for dramatic effect as we were about to celebrate the rightful restoration of the leadership of the Premiership for at least a few days and on goal difference, which is marvellous stuff. Anyway, in the studio, two fine folk. You've spoken to them both before, Ian. We have Ben Lewis.
Hi, Ben.
Morning. Who, of course, can celebrate the joys of Brighton.
Oh, it's painful, isn't it? I don't know if you watched it last night, Ian.
Yeah, I watched a bit of it. I thought you were going to go out, and then the most crazy, well, two of the crazy goals in ordinary time. And then you did it. I went off to the pub after that. So
they made it hard for themselves.
But anyway,
they?
By the time I got the pub, you're 2-1 up, and then you won 3-1, I got there.
And the first goal, of course, of Brighton scored by a man who should have actually been sent off. But there we are.
I know, yeah, wonderful.
That's, just because you're shaking your head there, Rory, as though you're...
In dismay. Should have been sent off.
He should have been. I'm not going to deny it. He should have been sent off, but, you know, we got lucky,
exactly.
I suppose. Just about.
Chris Hughton works his magic yet again to actually progress you through. Indeed. Rory, are you an Arsenal fan? Or was that my hallucinations one stage? Or did you not follow the game at all?
I don't follow the game very much. No, I hear bits and pieces, and with such a massive cast in the studio today, I'm sure I can bounce a lot of people's opinions off of my own.
Are you into the Six Nations as far as rugby's concerned?
Can't say that I am.
Yeah, it's good to see that England have managed to restore some pride.
Yes, that was a historic win against Ireland.
Exactly. Yes, so we work through. I mean, I know it's mostly Arthur McKenzie who's the clean rugby fanatic, but what about yourself, Ian? Have you been checking out the rugby form?
I did watch it actually, and I'm always amused at the press of which I was a member are such ephemeral beasts that they had Eddie Jones written off as a manager about a year ago. And now suddenly England are one of the World Cup favourites again.
Mm.
There's just far too many opinions in sport nowadays, I think. We don't. I remember as a youth coming back from football matches, we never talked very much about whether the referee had done this or whether that had been there or something. And it's all the time now. Good talking points because there's so many cameras there. There's so many different views that we can... So trying to disseminate the actual facts, but the point is that the game's gone and getting lost in all in this sort of these controversial sort of little bits of opinions on what happened and what was right, what was wrong.
Are you implying, Ian, that the game is not going to benefit next season from VAR throughout the Premiership?
It might benefit because, like it or not, there's no way they're going to escape professional pundits whose job it is to scrutinise the evidence of the cameras. And at least they're going to get the most things right, I think.
There will be things going wrong, though. I mean, it's the same in rugby and cricket, isn't there, where there's decisions that are still, even after, you know, Hawkeye or whatever you want to call it, third
have
official.
A number of challenges.
You know, that's it. Yeah. There will still be things that go wrong. But there's, you know, there's a lot less chance of that happening now, which I think is quite positive.
The point I'm trying to make is that we're in danger of not enjoying the game anymore and getting involved in arguments or this happened and that happened. And not just exactly... I mean, I watched the England-Ireland rugby game, and that was a fantastic match. But it could have easily been spoiled by people sort of saying, you know, was this a try, was that a try, and all that sort of stuff. What I'm trying to say is that when I was a young man, there was a certain flow to a match they went to, and it wasn't based on arguments.
I think
about.
You're looking back nostalgically there through the lens of a period that probably never existed, Ian. I think it's just a case of...
No, I'm not.
Okay, let's ask our journalism and creative writing specialist, level one. Rory, does this matter an iota to yourself, or is it just a case of, well, whatever?
Oh, I feel so useless, Alex. To be honest, I don't follow a lot of sport.
Really?
And so, no, I do not.
See, I thought with your background in the Naval Cadets... Is it Naval Cadets?
Air Cadets.
I know it's Cadets of some way, shape or form. That you would have actually been a sporty person, but no.
Well, no, I do running. I do a lot of sports that don't involve a ball, I tend to remind myself
so
that those can
United,
get flung
actually.
At your head.
I mean, I think Newcastle United do a lot of running without the ball, really. That's when they're not capitulating to size like that.
They got a win, didn't they, last week?
Yes, I would. What was that against? Against quite a good team.
I know. I thought Emma Street would have been here today to celebrate Tottenham sort of resuming their title challenge, etc., but clearly not. Anyway, I think we can pretty much guarantee that come the penultimate game of the season where Liverpool play Newcastle United, Newcastle might as well just not turn up, really. They'll just step aside and hand over the goals. Maybe that's just too controversial. Rory, athletics, are you more of an athletic soul?
I suppose so, yes. Done some athletics.
Look forward to when Arthur McKenzie takes over the duties. Hopefully, it hasn't. I mean, we're still in the. I think Ian's still talking about negotiating deals and contracts, etc. We're still in the list of emails and so on. So,
you know, because he's negotiating a round figure.
Because you're heading off. When is it next week, Ian?
Yes, it is. Yes.
So actually, this is the last time we'll speak to you until you return from your sunny climbs in when? March.
In March. Yes.
Yeah. Seriously. So, whole new Geordie, well, actually not whole new Geordie, because Arthur McKenzie isn't a whole new Geordie, but he's very friendly. Newcastle, so ex-chief police constable, inspector of internal affairs when he went over to Hong Kong, great writer, playwright extraordinaire, contributed immensely to shows like The Bill and various other bits and pieces, and is now...
He's not The Bill.
Yeah, well, then...
I think he was the highest-paid writer in British television at one time.
Exactly. Whoa. That's Arthur McKenzie, you see, the substitute for Ian Lennox.
Yes.
Ian, back in the day, when Cameron Tilbury used to actually be regular on our Wednesday night programmes, we always used to give you the opportunity to cast your ear over a critical piece of music, which we'd actually featured the night before. Now, I know you'd be delighted to know that last night we featured Millie, who's a singer-songwriter, from actually just outside Dublin. And I'm sure you'd like to hear her attempt. Sadly, it wasn't taken on board as a Eurovision entry, but it's called Breakdown, brackets, the car insurance song. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Written by Millie, although that wasn't Millie singing, Breakdown, the car insurance song. What did you make of it, Ian Lennox?
I don't really know, really. I hadn't heard anything much like it recently.
No. It is unique.
We basically said it sounded a bit like a Eurovision entry.
Which is why it's sad it didn't even get to Eurovision, right? Because I think it's, you know, given that we've got the Song for Europe Choice this Friday, I believe, that BBC are actually running, I thought that would have been good.
Graham Norton usually, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think he's singing. several artists who actually performed.
That's a shame.
Anyway, it paves the way for what obviously we need to know, and there's doubtless been a special circle in hell reserved for Eurovision entries that have never quite made the grade.
Not
that
one. That have no plan.
Exactly. They've broken down. Actually, Breakdown has, say, the insurance song.
Since we've got a song in the top 30 in the Eurovision Song Contest. Stunned silence.
Are you some confused, Ian? Sorry, what were you saying? We've had a song in the top 30?
About Eurovision entries and things.
Yes, yes.
And I'm just wondering, how long is it since we had a song that figured in the top...
You mean of the British charts?
No, it was a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
European Song Competition.
Yeah, I think it was a couple of years ago. I can't remember now. But we've not come, well, first. It was mainly last, wasn't it, really, to be fair?
Yeah, or 17th. Yes. At least we've qualified. Who knows what's going to happen with respect to the political shenanigans that are going on. This year, of course, technically, will be the first Eurovision Song Contest that's taken place since, of course, the Big B thing will have happened.
Well, I think most people, I think the more...
Why isn't Theresa May singing for the country? That's what I want to know.
Maybe.
She'd do a fantastic dancing queen.
Exactly.
I'm sure.
Yeah, that's what we should have. Forget all these new up-and-coming artists. Get Prime Minister Theresa May to actually perform with the dance moves.
With the dance moves
Rory's
and everything.
Demonstrating them in the studio at this present moment in time. It's just so awesome.
Don't Eurovision have topics, though, every year? Little themes? So, I don't know, when a car breakdown, when would that actually fit into a theme? Because usually, like, theme of happiness or joy or, you know, something like
diversity
that.
Diversity and inclusivity.
I don't know. Yeah, breakdown.
If you're listening, you can have that for free. Rory, last two questions.
Just to break out.
No. Would you like to ask Ian those last two questions, please?
I can indeed, Alex. So, Ian, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I have, thank you.
And will you be joining us again soon?
I hope so, yes. And I'll be having
but
a bit of sun tan and start writing my book and stuff.
Where are you going again, Ian? Remind us.
Near Malaga.
And when do you actually leave?
Six days' time.
So time to actually negotiate.
You can't wait to warm up.
That Arthur McKenzie sort of treatment from that point of view, which is great. Ian Lennox will return, but not until March, because he's going to be in Malaga. Doing his own kind of Brexit negotiations. Which is nice. We won't ask whether he's leave or remain, but honestly, you know, sometimes it's a whole new world, really. Gibraltar, of course, 94% remain, as indeed we find. It's not going to help them at all. News coming up in a few seconds after the news. Well, we've got William Sitwell. We've got Merlin Griffiths talking about non-alcoholic drinks and a whole heap of other goodies as far as the programme is concerned. And BAFTA award-winning Graham Harper.
FM. Online. Mobile. This is Siren Radio, Lincoln.
From the Sky News Centre at 9, a 24-year-old man's been arrested in connection with the disappearance of Hull University student Libby Squire. Humberside Police says the 21-year-old still hasn't been found. She was last seen after a night out in the city a week ago. A body's been successfully recovered from the aircraft, which was carrying Cardiff City footballer Emiliano Sala and pilot David Ibbotson. It came down over the English Channel 2.5 weeks ago. The Air Accidents Investigation Branch says it was unable to retrieve the aircraft because of poor weather conditions. Katerina Vitozzi is in Portland, where the body is due to be returned to.
The body that was recovered has not yet been formally identified. We would expect that to happen in the presence of the Dorset coroner, although the family members of both Emiliano Sala and the pilot, Dave Ibbotson, have been kept fully up to date with every stage of this operation.
More than half of British households will see an increase in their energy bills from April after the regulator Ofgem raised price caps. It could see customers typically pay an extra £117 a year. The Labour leader set out his demands to Theresa May before his party will support a Brexit deal in Parliament. Jeremy Corbyn's letter to the Prime Minister includes a requirement for a UK-wide customs union and close alignment with the single market. Mrs May's in Brussels to negotiate changes to the fiercely opposed Irish backstop, which prevents a hard border. Northern Ireland Secretary Karen Bradley, who voted to remain, thinks it can be done.
We want to find a way that we can present to Parliament a withdrawal agreement that Parliament can vote for so we can leave with a deal that is in the interests of the United Kingdom.
All horse racing in Britain has been cancelled today because of an outbreak of equine flu. Three horses which had been vaccinated tested positive for the disease. And a study into bees has found they're able to carry out basic maths. Experiments in Melbourne and Australia also suggest they could be taught to recognise colours as plus and minus symbols. That's the latest. I'm Daisy Gray.
Siren Radio.
or as many of our most positive listeners would say, bzzz. Weather today, highs of 7 degrees centigrade, lows of 4 degrees centigrade. It's going to be a day of strong winds and breezes. Well, over the years, we've seen changing attitudes when it comes to the consumption of alcohol, and indeed, certainly with the respect to students at the University of Lincoln, and is noticing a marked reduction in people who are actually not partaking in alcohol and various other things, or indeed reducing their intake, with over a fifth of adults saying that they don't drink any alcohol whatsoever. Indeed, British adults who do drink alcohol would generally classify themselves as low drinkers across the age groups. Now, to talk about this, and indeed some of the other research that has emerged from this finding from Mocktails, of course. Who better than two fabulous, fine folk? First of all, TV's favourite barman and all-round celebrity mixologist, that's, of course, the fabulous Merlin Griffiths. How are you, Merlin?
Good morning, Alex. Very well. Lovely to be here.
Excellent. And indeed, from Mocktails, Ezra Starr. How are you, Ezra?
Good morning, Alex. How are you?
Excellent. Ezra, would you like to just share with us anything that surprised you about this research, or is it just a case of, well, we are much more sensible now, we are thinking about our liver, and as a result, we're kind of drinking much more sensibly?
Honestly, I think the research doesn't surprise me a whole lot. I've seen a lot of it from behind my bar. especially with social media growing so much. Nobody wants that ugly photo online. So turning to pay attention to how you drink and cutting back on it a bit makes a lot of sense to me.
So the days, obviously, the dentist's chair and England footballers actually being caught out in Hong Kong, presumably they've long gone, Merlin.
They have indeed. The dentist's chair is now actually illegal in
exactly.
this country, I do believe it. Yes, completely. But no, this is right. I mean, you know, as you're going to be seeing with the University of Lincoln students there as well, they're drinking less. They really are drinking less. And rightly so. You know, they're more focused on their studies, more focused on their lives, career, health, a number of reasons. And as Ezra said, yeah, you don't want that photo doing the rounds either, do you? So people tend to want to stay in control a bit more. And this is where companies like Mocktail sort of come on board here. There needs to be something a bit more beyond an orange juice and lemonade, eh?
Or indeed my own particular personal favourite, which was the blackcurrant and lemonade. But that's a different line entirely. So in terms of alternatives to alcohol, again, presumably that's something where Mocktails can actually really develop a whole range of things. Is that right, Ezra?
Absolutely. There are so many options out there that are just very simple soda and maybe soda water and a lime, and we wanted to create something that was just delicious, something that was for grown-ups, something that you could drink and enjoy with your friends and at a dinner, whatever it might be.
Well, certainly the days have long since changed when in various sort of local hostelries in Oxford and indeed Cambridge, I would actually ask for a still mineral water and be looked at as though I was an alien from outer space, but that's a different sort of entirely line from that. Merlin, from your own point of view, this range of alternatives, I mean, clearly as the Tom Cruise, let's face it, of contemporary television, I mean, you know, Tom Cruise probably wants his entire cocktail line on your
work. I
think
his head is growing bigger and bigger as you speak.
Yeah. Exactly. So from that perspective, is this a case where you think, yeah, actually, there's a lot of real fun things we can actually create when it comes to the chemistry of mixing drinks?
Well, there is, you see, and this is about adult flavours. You know, if you're not going to be drinking and enjoying the flavours in wine and in cask ale or what have you, you need to be enjoying adult flavours and complex flavours in your non-alcoholic drinks. And while Ezra and I in our own bars are quite happy to mix you up something custom from complicated homemade ingredients and apply that sort of mixology approach to what we do, there still needs to be a more commonly and readily available substitute. And this is where guys like Mocktails come in. I mean, they're using, you know, they're covering off your popular bases, okay? Cosmopolitans, margaritas, sangrias, mules. However, they're doing it with natural ingredients. They're doing it with interesting flavor spins. They're cosmos infused through with bits of juniper. The mule does have a nice ginger kick. The sangria variant they've got, honestly, easy wine replacement. And so now you're part of the party again. You don't want to be that guy sitting at the end drinking water and everyone going, why aren't you drinking today?
And that's actually a big part of why we were doing this, is we wanted to bring everybody into the party, have a good time, and just not make you feel like you're standing out because you want to take a little break from drinking.
I think it's socially acceptable these days to be the non-drinker. It's absolutely fine, you know, and it's a growing trend and something we're going to see more and more of. From my side as a landlord these days, as well as a television bartender, I see not only more people requesting it, but I know that my trade needs to adapt and we need to be offering more for the non-drinker. We have to.
I was interested to find that from the survey that of those who were made to feel uncomfortable when actually choosing not to drink, half of women had a negative experience with colleagues and almost a third of men had a negative experience with management. That peer pressure, again, I think in the contemporary climate, it's going the way of the dinosaur, I would suggest.
I think you're right. You know, we're in an age of individualism where you should be proud of who you are and what you do and the choices you make. And you shouldn't let it, and especially when it comes to what you drink when you socialize, such a minor thing like that, you should not feel stigmatized for it.
And especially if you're making a decision to make a healthy life choice and cut back on drinking or not drink at all, then you shouldn't be looked down on that in any way. And creating something that allows you to participate with the group and be a part of it is really the plan, the goal.
Merlin, will this mean the demise of the sad, lonely individual at the bar, effectively deciding to engage in full alcohol, etc., and says, nobody loves me anymore, nobody understands me, Merlin? Is that going, or is that a different line entirely?
Hopefully not, and definitely not, I think, no. It's just that we're learning to moderate our intake these days. And you know, I'm not here to say that alcohol's bad, but drink less, drink better, and then look at other good options for when you're not drinking. There is more out there, and there will be more out there, and this is an area which you will see growing as we go forward.
And I suspect mocktails.com would be a go-to place to find out details about this and more stuff.
That's absolutely right.
Ezra Starr from Mocktails and TV barman and celebrity extraordinaire, celebrity mixologist extraordinaire Merlin Griffiths. Many thanks indeed. Take care and happy drinking, happy non-alcoholic drinking, gentlemen.
Thank you, Alex.
Hi, my name is Stereo Mike.
This is Liquid, ring a ding a ding. I want those 3 grand band tickets, man. What do you think? Todd!
He's alive!
I woke up again this morning with the sun in my eyes. When Mike came over with a script surprise. A mafioso story with a twist. A 2-1 fool to you, are here to get your ass out of bed. He said, I'll explain it on the way.
But we did nothing, absolutely nothing that day. And I say, what the hell am I doing drinking in L.A. at 26? I got the fever for the flavor, the payback for the labor. Still I'm in a fix.
Yeah, and the girls on the bus kept on laughing at us. We're rum tan down to Venice again. Firing up the G-Funk, sipping on juice and gin. Just me and a friend, feeling kinda groovy, working on a movie.
Yeah, right!
But we did nothing, absolutely buckets that day. And I'll say, what the hell am I doing drinking in L.A. at 26?
With my mind on my money and my money.
Good news for the Sleepyhead Clinic fans, because Stephanie Romoshevsky will be back with us in February. She's returned safely from South America. And don't forget, this evening on Siren Radio at 7 o'clock, well, 2 minutes past 7 to be precise, Chloe Rose, her first ever full show, Sound and Chloe's Vision. Are you excited, Ben?
I am.
Exactly. Excited, Rory?
Well, any new show on Siren?
Sound
it's got to be exciting.
Vision. It is very, very, very exciting. William Sitwell will be coming up very shortly, weighing in on the gentrified gin boom.
I want to know if you've done the asparagus column.
This is very true. I need the source
of inspiration for William and his articles now, I think.
So far, I'm going from last Saturday's Telegraph, the words good, green and buttery richness were employed.
That is very close.
Good, green and buttery richness. Before William Sitwell, of course, who will be joining us in a matter of moments, we've got Ruchira Verma. But now Redbone.
Bye.
course, actually, in many ways, the thing I live for each Saturday is the column The Cut and Table Talk, literally for William Weighs In, because it is just, you know, an awesome, awesome number. And as we said, the words green, buttery, richness did indeed feature in this. Ben, I know you were keen to find out, was this because William actually seized the challenge, seized the asparagus challenge?
Did I source his inspiration for asparagus? That's what we all want to know.
Has the asparagus appeared as yet, William Sitwell?
It's a bit early.
Exactly.
Premature.
You put your crowns in, Ben.
Far too soon. Mm. Far too soon.
It'll happen, but...
I'm such an amateur.
Fine. We were talking about mocktails a few seconds ago, of course, with our celebrity mixologist, Merlin Griffiths, and William weighs in on the gentrified gin boon, to be precise. Have we reached pink gin? Not according to the people of Fotheringay in Northamptonshire. Jaded by regular fundraising activities, churchgoer Lady Victoria Leatham has come up with the idea, Fotheringay gin made using Plantagenet herbs, quince, orris, white rose, sales of which raise money for St. Mary and All Saints. The Holy Spirit may move in mysterious ways, a local tells me, but Victoria's gin tastes great and keeps the roof on the church. Who else but William Sitwell could actually channel the magic of the media to actually sort of develop that gentrified gin boon? Well,
yeah,
said, William.
Good story, that. You should get Lady Victoria on your show.
Yeah, I think we'll chase it up.
I think she's one of the more interesting gin producers that this nation has produced.
And as many folk have actually said, without gin, no British Empire.
True. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Sure. Churchill actually said the whole empire was made by the gin exports. It's more than just tonic for the troops, so to speak. Anyway, and given what's happening in Europe with various other bits and pieces, who knows what could happen. William, I'll introduce you to, obviously, Ben, you've met before.
Yes, morning, William.
Sort of through, big fan. And Rory McGowan, of course, from Bedfordshire.
Hello there, William.
Good morning, dear. How exciting to have Bedfordshire represented.
I thought so.
Thank you. It's not often represented, is it, Bedfordshire?
Bedfordshire, Lincolnshire, Northamptonshire, these are the kind of deal breakers that hopefully the Prime Minister will be echoing when she's meeting those people in the circle of Hades that's been reserved specially.
Well, not from us here.
I don't get a lot of compliments for Bedfordshire, but no, thank you very much.
the High Street of Bedford is a fantastic example of Britain's foodie multiculturalism. If you walk up that high street, you'll see food represented from China, Japan, probably Vietnam now, Italy, France, India. It's a fantastic example of people might think we put two fingers up at foreigners, but we certainly want to eat their food.
Yes, yes. Especially
and they certainly are in Bedford.
Especially Italy, because there are a lot of there's a lot of Italian roots in Bedford.
I was just actually going to give a shameless plug to the restaurant that William reviewed, but I see it's only got a 3-star rating, and I'm afraid it doesn't really qualify for a mention, if that's the thing. So, I mean,
was that Ice?
It may have been. You know, I mean, I'm just working...
People are after buying that paper!
Restaurant that can't be named.
I'm working on an editorial bonus policy here, in unofficially, in association, obviously, with William and The Telegraph, by which we get a 5-star rating. We'll give an additional bonus mention on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Anything less, sorry.
I think you'll find that the review that will come out this Saturday has... 4.5 stars.
Well, I think that might qualify.
We'll have to make a segment on that on the show next week, Alex.
Exactly. We'll qualify. But, you know, thankfully, even with respect to the review, you see, when you used to have Michael Winner, who you chaps are far too young to remember.
Michael Winner
used to go around doing this. I always felt he never quite captured the essence of the whole feeding experience. Williams just captured that and more, really. I mean, it's just phenomenal. Anybody can
actually... And A.A. Gill. A.A. Gill as well.
Yeah, more kind of cultural soul, A.A. Gill, I found, though. It's a bit, apparently, it's a sort of Norway meets Japan and comes back to Britain concept, but I'm none the wiser. I mean, that is genius. Edith Sitwell will be looking down from on high, William, saying, exactly, it's genius stuff. So what will you be doing this week, then, William, in terms of book writing and such like in the Southwest?
God, you make my heart shudder by even thinking about it. I have to write my... next review this morning for the Telegraph, and then I will be trying to organise my supper clubs, and then I'm going to be trying to finish the chapter about Pompeii in my book, which is taking a rather long time.
Is it going up or down? Sorry, I couldn't resist it. You know,
what's going up?
Pompeii, obviously.
Oh, sorry. Hey,
Frankie Howard. Classics.
Yeah, I'm still sitting in this inn, the Inn of Primus, in the corner of the main drag, contemplating the locals.
Yeah, it's a way of getting inspiration. I mean, Rory, as a journalism and creative writing student, you know, would you say this is possibly another technique you might apply for your own creativity?
Oh, most certainly. Yeah, I can definitely foresee myself using it.
There's a big debate amongst Pompeii scholars about the number of brothels in this town. So for quite a while, people have thought that there were an extraordinary number of brothels because of the number of dirty, hideous pictures and graffiti on all the walls.
Mm.
But then more sensible scholars like Professor Mary Beard believe that actually it's just that the Romans and the Pompeians had a dirty sense of humour, which is
pretty bold,
why
I think.
We see so many of these cartoons, and that the place actually wasn't completely stuffed with brothels.
You see a combination between that on the one hand from the Latin sense of humour, and then of course all those Vikings from the north with their short, sharp Anglo-Saxonisms and such like. It's little wonder that Britain tends to be somewhat confused at times. Key thing is, don't ask for a referendum. That's all I will say. That's how you get Boaty McBoatface. End of.
That's very
just
true.
Giving Britain polls, I think, in general, there's never been historic success with them.
I was going to say, Alex, is Boaty McBoatface the worst thing to come out of a referendum?
No, that would probably be the Eurovision Song Contest.
There we go.
Which is a kind of annual referendum, really, where we never quite get it right.
It's all about politics, I suppose, isn't it?
The Roman Empire came to an end, though, didn't it, without a referendum? And the Roman Empire was about having singularity of tax, language, laws, and currency.
That's true.
Because if the barbarians, started gnawing at the edges.
And when those barbarians start gnawing at the edges, that's the time to actually up sticks and go back to Rome, really. And say, we've had enough. Thank you very much, Hannibal. We're on our way. Anyway, that's who would have thought we'd actually move from culinary matters, asparagus, premature asparagus, admittedly, supper clubs, right the way through to the state of play for the Romans.
Well, when is the next supper club? Dare we put a plug in?
Well, the next one that I'm running is on the 15th of February, which is Cricket, which is an amazing restaurant run by two English boys. The white English boys cooking Indian food, which has caused quite a stir.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be cooking in Northamptonshire, and then the next first London supper club will be in London on the 15th of March, which I have details because I've yet to announce because I haven't organised it yet. And then Santa Remedio, we're going to be eating grasshoppers at Western on the 22nd of March.
Excellent. Do they know the grasshoppers? Are they aware of this? Or is it a case that they get Buddy Holly on with his friends as well?
They're presenting themselves. They're walking down the terrace as we speak.
Excellent.
Queuing up to be slaughtered.
Excellent. It's just quality. Now, as I'm planning my television watching schedules, I need to know, William, do you have input into the new upcoming Celebrity MasterChef or the MasterChef that's sort of launching series? Because if you're not in it, frankly, I don't want to know. So, bottom line.
I can't remember. You film these things and then you forget if you've done it.
Okay.
See.
Sounds like a teaser to me.
It's a surprise.
Exactly so. Rory, would you like to put those last two questions to the Sitwell Meister before we head up to Academy Award? Well, actually, no, he hasn't won an Academy Award. He's won a BAFTA, not an Academy Award. Graham Harper, off you go, please, Rory.
I can indeed, Alex. So, William, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I think it's wonderful to explore a gastronomic safari of the mind down Bedford High Street.
Thank you very much. And will you be joining us again soon?
No doubt.
There's a certain sound always follows me around when you're close to me. Sound that lovers hear when they discover there could be no other for their love. It's my happy heart to hear
For fans of Ruchia Verma, don't worry, she will return, but we had to have one or two little challenges as far as the studio at Siren was concerned. Well, actually, it was based at Siren's base at the University of Lincoln, doing one of the things called fire alarm testing drills. It's great stuff.
Indeed.
We didn't think we'd get back in time for Graham Harper. Fortunately, we have, and Graham is with us now. Good morning, Graham Harper.
Good morning. Oh, hiya.
In your time at the BBC or other institutions, Graham, did you ever used to sort of have to stop things because of fire alarm drills, etc., or was it just a case of, it's the BBC, let it burn?
There were many fire drills. I don't remember a production stopping because of that. I can't. When I was in the studio, I don't remember that, but I do remember everybody having to leave the building in an orderly fashion. So obviously somebody got affected in the studios, yeah.
And of course, back in the 70s, of course, and in the early 80s, there was the height of the Troubles, so you could have had all sorts of question marks over broadcasting and various terrorist groups and so on. So let's hope Brexit doesn't lead to a return to that. But anyway, enough of such stuff. Let's move on. Last night, Graham, you were at the Royal Television Society. Would you like to share with us and the listener what exactly you were doing?
Oh, you know your stuff. So I was invited to be a judge on the drama panel, judging the Student Awards, the Royal Television Society Studio Awards, Student Awards, and we decided on four nominations. This was about 2 months ago, and then I was invited. I didn't actually give the awards. I was invited to go to the presentation, etc., which happened last night at Channel 4. And it was smashing. And in my opinion, the right film won. There were two really, really tough contenders. And the right film won. It was a film called Just Josie. And it's a delightful short. It was funny because I was talking to the young director and the producer of it afterwards. And I said, "So what happens now? Have you started looking for work?" Because they've obviously just left university. And apparently one of the tutors had invited a particular member of a particular company to come and look at the end-of-term projects when they were being shown. And he offered them jobs, the two of them. Yay. I thought it was wonderful, you know, trainee jobs, but wonderful jobs in areas that will help them to get to where they want to be. Mm. So I was really thrilled for that. I thought that was brilliant.
It's almost as though they're at the University of Lincoln, isn't it, really? But still,
of course it is. If you're doing all that, you're going to do really well.
Oh, talking to the University of Lincoln, we have two fine undergraduates with us. Level 3 undergraduate, but soon to be graduate, of course, that'd be Ben Lewis.
Good morning, Graham.
Hello, Ben.
Keen Brighton supporter, and indeed...
Just put that on there.
...would have almost been a footballer yourself, Ben. You could have almost made that
once,
grade.
Once upon a time.
Exactly. But in the end, he decided to turn to academia, as one does. And in his first year of a journalism and creative writing degree programme, that's Rory McGowan.
Hello there, Graham.
Hello, Rory. Nice to hear you all.
Passionate Doctor Who fan as well.
Yes, I am.
Especially of the David Tennant era, is that correct?
Yes. Well, a lot of modern Who, really.
A lot of modern Who, exactly. Well,
very good. Excellent.
Yeah, so your chance, Rory, to ask Graham about anything to do with Who, classic or indeed modern, because he is the man. I think he still holds the record in the Guinness Book as being the most prolific director of old and classic, etc.
Oh, that's such a that's such a broad topic, Alex.
Old, classic and new, of course.
Yes.
Let's not forget the new, because there is a newness to the whole system, you know, because old and classic makes him sound like ancient, but very, very recent.
I am.
Oh, Graham, I do have one question, what was your favourite series of New Who to work on?
Gosh, favourite series?
Or episode?
Favourite series or episode? Or?
I wouldn't say it was my favourite. I found the depths of... When I worked on the... Whether I was an assistant coming up through the ranks or a director, when I worked on Doctor Who, the classic version, I don't remember, and this is really wrong of me to say this because I'm absolutely certain it was just as the same, but I don't remember the depth of love and passion and characterisation, the emotional side of it being so deep as it was with David Tennant and Billy Piper's period. Mm-hmm. And then there have been, I think, subsequent moments after, but they introduced something much deeper than I'd ever seen before in Doctor Who. The Doctor in love with a mortal, goodness me. And I never saw that. With David Tennant's era, there was a fabulous relationship between him and Billy Piper on screen. And they were friends. I mean, they were very good friends outside that. But they produced this fabulous depth of character between the two of them, which I thought was stunning and very well written for. That amongst all the action and adventure, that was a wonderful thing to see and do. And so his parting of the ways, I thought, their parting of their ways in one of the episodes I did, I thought was absolutely stunning, the way they played.
Did it affect you as a child, Rory?
Oh, it had a massive impact on me as a child.
They shot it on a beach in Cardiff, you know. Mm. Claimed to be in Norway, but actually it was a beach in Cardiff.
Yeah, well, Doctor Who nowadays goes all over the planet, doesn't it?
We are stuck in Cardiff.
Yeah. Cardiff, I mean, you know, it's got to qualify it slightly.
They go to South Africa and all sorts of wonderful places.
Yeah, well, yes, but it's stuck in Cardiff. I mean, at least you stepped away from Threshold and Union House when that was
happening. I did.
Those people who are with the BBC will know that. During the fire drill, we were actually speaking to two people who were ex-BBC folk who were saying they never watch or listen to any of the programmes that they were involved with ever. No, they just ignore it completely. So, I don't know. You still watch Doctor Who, don't you, Graham?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there we are. Next one, 2020, because obviously they're so stressed these days that Chris Chibnall can only make one a year. So he's obviously got another one coming up next year, so somewhere along the line. Anyway, Ben, before you actually leave us, because I know you need to be heading off shortly to do various other bits and pieces.
Very
commendable. Mm. It's very good. Mm. With a tutor who actually was so brave in a day where the high in Lincoln is 7 degrees centigrade, low 4 degrees centigrade.
It feels like minus 5, though.
Strong winds and rain, actually went out in a shirt.
He did, went out in a shirt. I mean, just come out of the meeting, but didn't bother to put a jacket on or a coat on, in fact. It was just brave in the shirt.
Sometimes.
And he was not northern.
No, exactly. East Midlands, yes, exactly. But not northern, no. Thankfully, I did have a jumper, but jacket not out of the way. What would you like to quiz Graham about?
Graham, yes. I know you've obviously worked on a few productions over your career. Is there anything in the near future you'd like to do that you haven't done yet? And if so, what?
I want to make a Western.
Yeah.
I'd like someone to employ me to make a great Western. Mm. I've tried to make my own, but in fact...
About the original Welsh cowboys who went to America.
I've done my Westerns, really, in Robin Hood, because that's a kind of Western when you do men on horseback rushing through forests. Well, it's not deserts, but it's forests. I'd just love to have done a Western in my life, something unusual and interesting... but I guess that's not going to happen now.
You can do a spaghetti one, spaghetti Western.
Exactly.
I would love to do one, but there we are. It's a dream, and it won't matter if I don't.
Oh, but in some alternate reality, he will. So that's important.
Probably. Then I'd probably have it. The budget will be endless. That could be brilliant.
Mm. We thank Phil Leonis from Los Angeles, it was Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar, Richard Fitzwilliams from London, Ian Lennox from Tyneside, and our mixologist, our celebrity mixologist, Merlin Griffiths. What would you say, Graham, a celebrity mixologist actually does?
I've no idea. It sounds like he makes a cake.
Cocktails. Close.
Non-alcoholic
cocktails, to be precise. Thanks to William Sitwell, as ever, and, of course, to Graham Harper, who's managed to wrap up the show quite neatly, as I say, despite the slight interruption that we actually had in Matrix Times, where we had to momentarily go to a music-based format, which, of course, we have, and lots of music coming up after we wrap up this morning. But I think it's time we took one question each. So which question would you like to ask Graham, please? Ben?
Graham, have you enjoyed your 10 o'clock loop of stay in the show?
Hi, Ben. Yes, I have. Thank you very much.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And that leaves you, Rory, with...
And will you be joining us again in the future?
I certainly will. I look forward to it.
Well, that's
and
it.
We do as well.
Exactly. We'll be back with the Midweek Drive next Wednesday with the editor-in-chief of SFX magazine, whose name, of course, is Richard Edwards, who'll be back with us. We'll also be speaking to a whole heap of other goodies as well. Like Anna Lewis will be back with us. William Coles will be doing various other bits and pieces. Graham as well. Philip Hurdwood back. Who knows? I mean, you know, it was thanks to Graham that Phil Hurdwood came on board the team back in the day.
long before Rory and Ben actually even emerged as life forms on the planet.
But indeed.
Maybe they were reincarnated.
Maybe.
Thank you, dear listener. Don't forget, Sound of Chloe's Vision up at 7 o'clock this evening. Graham, what would you think our final valedictory piece should be? I mean, well, last night we finished off with Happy February.
Good luck the end of March.
Good luck the end of March. It's a bit too soon for that. It's a bit too premature. Yeah.
No, I think it's coming too fast.
We've only just started February.
Yeah, I think he's got a European sort of line there. He's got March the 29th in mind, and I don't.
Sooner we're out, the better.
Well, there you have it.
Much agreed.
there's a cold.
I'm on my own in the studio. Graham. I need you here.
I'm coming.
And actually, yes, hopefully Graham will come up to Lincoln, because we've spoken about this for some time.
Definitely.
I think we need to make that happen. So, like, that's it, basically. We'll say that the words.
Welcome.
Come to Graham. Come back to Lincoln. Graham.
We're coming.
One, two, three.
Come back to Lincoln, Graham.